I'm Ryan Biedischen. I'm a Berkman Fellow here, and I also run the Herdict Project, which is a crowdsourced project for tracking internet censorship. And so I'm really excited to introduce Meredith Whitaker and Thomas Gideon. They work on Measurement Lab, which they will explain all about. But Meredith is a program manager for Google Research. And, you know, perhaps more excitingly, in her past life, she managed punk rock bands. So if you have questions about that, you know, as well, I'm sure she's open to that. And Thomas Gideon is the technical director for the Open Technology Institute at the New America Foundation. So take it away.
Cool. Am I broadcasting, Dan? Is this happening? Okay, cool. So I'm really happy to be here. As a young college student, I used to watch these luncheon series and just think, wow, they do the coolest things. So this is, you know, maybe 7 years ago, and now I'm here, which is really, really exciting for me personally. Thomas and I are going to be talking about something that we work on with a number of others, and our style is really to present this in tandem and to leave a lot of room for questions and comments to make it, you know, evolve as conversationally as possible, because there are a number of things that we may forget to cover. There are a number of things that you may be specifically interested in that we want to hear about. So, please, any questions, any comments, they're really welcome. I'm going to start by giving kind of an overview. Thomas is going to go into some of the technical details, and then I'll finish by giving some more information. So let's get started. So MLAB, Measurement Lab, what is it and who is it? It's, you know, I have here a screenshot of kind of a storm of logos, and this is a quick shorthand way to just communicate that MLAB is not a, you know, it is not just Google, it is not just the Open Technology Institute, this is a research consortium, and it's something that is supported by a number of different, as you see, you know, fairly disparate or not always aligned interests. And, you know, why are all of these different entities, and many more, actually, this is sort of a short sampling, why are they into this? I'll start with kind of a creation story, and this should frame it but not answer all the questions. So in 1995, the NSF backbone was privatized. Many of you, I'm sure, know this history, and probably some of you know it better than I do, right? So this meant that researchers who were using that data for research, for network analysis, for you know, basically to propel the state of the understanding of networks, lost a valuable source of data. And since then, you know, 1995 is not a great time for that to happen, given where that exists in the history of the internet. So there was, you know, there's been since then struggle in the research community, right? How do you measure this? How do you measure the internet at scale, given that this is a huge, decentralized, dynamic, you know, dynamic and not centrally measured thing, right? This is a connection of different disparate entities that are all agreeing to connect in certain ways, but this is not something where one centralized point can understand everything, and it is not static. So researchers really struggled to get the data they needed to have a clear and, you know, realistic understanding of what was going on, right? People were trying to measure it in different ways, but it's expensive. It was hard to do, and this problem became, you know, more and more pronounced in that community until by 2009, when by 2009 this was really almost a crisis, right? Conclusions were being made based on, say, 12 data points gathered from measurements in one centralized location, and these were conference proceedings that were, you know, that were communicating the state of research understanding of the internet, but it was very clear that this was not sufficient to sort of nurture this giant global resource. And so in 2009, that was a time when, you know, regulators and people in non-technical fields had also caught on that the internet was not a trend, right? This was sticking around, and they had to do something about it. They had to understand it. It was around this time when Vint Cerf, who is sort of, you know, has toes in both communities, of course, convened a conference. And it was, you know, a number of luminaries from the network research community, a number of people who were sort of, you know, involved in regulating the internet and sort of technology policy were brought together, and this was the problem statement, basically: figure out how to provide a source of data at scale for internet science and policy. And I was actually there, and it was 2.5 days of arguing, of going back and forth with different solutions, of really hashing this out among a number of smart people who understood the need for this, but also were facing a number of constraints, right? Measurement Lab was what came out of that conference. And Measurement Lab is, you know, a means to give a number of diverse constituencies, right? These are researchers, these are regulators, and these are, you know, consumers and consumer advocates, access to a source of scientifically verifiable data about what's going on networks. So we will explain a little bit more about what that means, but that was the mission statement, and that is still the mission, and we continue. So this is not something I need to belabor, right? But everyone needs data, and data is, you know, data is a word that is a little bit maybe overused or not given the respect it is due sometimes, right? Data is not just a number of numbers in a CSV file, right? Data forms the foundation of how we understand things. And so if we rely on the internet as an economic driver, as a foundation for, you know, the way that we communicate and socialize, if we don't understand what's actually happening on those networks as users, as researchers, as people who need to understand their dynamics and impact within our communities and societies, then we aren't going to be able to create a future in which those work for us. So this is what I mean by data. I also mean a giant CSV file, but those things are not you know, this is not boring. This is incredibly important and incredibly cool. So you know, everyone needs access to this understanding, and everyone needs, you know, needs to be able to, you know, check each other's work. This needs to be verifiable, which is how I get to this next slide, right? This is another buzzword, right? Openness. But again, what we're talking about is allowing reproducible science in a space where it's difficult, right? It's not okay for regulation to be made based on, you know, NDA data sets which only a few people see. It is not okay for people to be paying for a service and not be able to have the agency to, you know, understand if there is a problem, what can I do about it, right? Is this a problem with the network, or is my OS out of date, right? There has to be a source of information for both of these constituencies in which, you know, I can say, I detect a problem, I ran a test, I may not understand what this data means, but I have a source of data that experts can look at, that your engineers can look at, that other people can look at, that will actually provide sort of a factual basis for a claim, right? And that is what MLab is committed to. Everything MLab does is totally open, and that is a strict dogmatic position that we have taken because we think it's so important that this be, you know, founded on a climate of collaborative reproducible science. So let's get in quickly to what MLab is and sort of how we do this, and then I'm going to turn it over to Thomas, who will get into even more of the details on that. So MLab is a broadly distributed across the globe server platform on which open source measurement tools run. So this server platform was designed with researchers at Planet Lab at Princeton and some other people specifically to host these network measurements. And that's not, you know, that in itself could be a two-hour talk, but basically what we needed to ensure is that the way the servers were instrumented, the requirements for hosting them, the way they were positioned, didn't bias the data in any way. So the server itself wasn't impacting the data, that we could guarantee that one position of the server, say in Antarctica, is acting exactly the same as a server placed in Argentina, and that the data collected could then be comparable. So our servers are really strict about being consistent and are instrumented specifically to allow that to happen for the measurement lab tests. We then work with researchers who build these tests, right? And these are all open source, which means that the methodology, the assumptions by which we're, you know, testing these things are open. So is this a single-threaded or a multi-threaded TCP stream? You know, if we're saying your speed is X, knowing how that was measured is crucial because the number is different. So all of that, you know, you can look at the code base and understand what are the assumptions made, and if they're incorrect, maybe submit a patch to fix that, right? Again, that's the whole premise of this collaborative science. I'll mention here that all of these tools are required to be user-facing. So these aren't inter-server tests. These aren't things that run in the background. These, you know, if you run a tool on the MLab platform, it has to give consumers something they're interested in. It has to serve the consumers as well. So, you know, that could be, you know, we have command line tools, right? And that's for the very geeky. We also have tools that can be embedded in, say, popular clients that will help, you know, help you understand your speed when you're using that, right? So that it spans the sort of user demographic, but all of these have to provide end users with something that at the end of the day will be useful or helpful or interesting. So we then sort of the deal is we talk to researchers, we say, you know, you have access to this global platform. You don't have to be a sysadmin, you don't have to manage servers, all this stuff that actually isn't research, you don't have to do it. That's great, right? You can concentrate on doing what you're good at. But the deal is all of the data has to be made publicly available in the public domain. This is a CC0 license. So we have, I think it's 630 terabytes as of yesterday of data that if you guys wanted to go there now, I can send you a link, you can download it. It's all publicly available. LOL. we also have a compute tool, a SQL-like tool that you can use to compute the data without having to download it, but that's an aside. Basically, you can access the data. It's all in the public domain, and this is raw, non-aggregate data that you know, again, spans, I think it's 200,000 tests a day, so it's a ton, and that's what we do. So at every step, it is open, and you know, if a claim needs to be made based on these data, the conversation can be about the data and about the facts and not about the positions in the room, which is, you know, something that we really advocate for. I'm now going to turn it over to Thomas, and he is going to discuss a little bit more just how this ecosystem works and some of the technical specifications that may be interesting.
Sure. As a partner in the MLab Consortium, Open Technologies' interest actually aligns pretty well with the three audiences that Meredith spoke to in terms of we do policy advocacy, we do qualitative field research, community outreach. My remit as Director of Technology are technology interventions. So what I'm going to talk about is really more of what my team is responsible for in our participation with MLab day in and day out, which is running this open global server platform. And I'm going to unpack some of the things that Meredith already mentioned in a bit more detail. Feel free to interrupt me if I throw anything out there that you're unfamiliar with and you'd like a little bit more explanation, or you just have questions about how the system overall works at any level. But as Meredith said, it is a global system. It's consistent and well-provisioned. We take as our starting point the PlanetLab server stack. So this is a Linux-based server stack that provides a bunch of management tools specifically for this kind of research, for network research. Most of the testbeds that use this technology are pretty much on demand. They're relatively elastic. Ours is inelastic. Every experiment is vetted by our steering committee, and the purpose for a slightly higher bar for requesting resources is so that we can guarantee a minimum proportion of the available computing power to each of the experiments that runs. And then in addition to that, one of the other main differences is that it is instrumented very specifically for this purpose. So currently we support the Web 100 instrumentation package for the Linux kernel, which allows us to collect over 150 variables of interest, the evolution of the TCP states in the networking stack of the system as connections come in, as synthetic test traffic is exchanged with the servers. And we're looking to the future, we're looking to gigabit links, to 10 gigabit links and beyond, looking at the work by the folks that are now building the Web 10G projects. That's the successor that will scale up. That'll be a superset of those 150 some odd variables, but designed for much, much higher capacity links and backbones. So this is I'm not controlling the slides. This is a nice bird's eye view of that global platform to emphasize where we are today, and obviously there are some opportunities of where we're looking with great interest tomorrow. So those 98 servers in 32 distinct locations around the world right now are pretty well concentrated in North America and Europe. We have a toehold in Asia, in Oceania, and we are definitely in talks with Africa. Some of the challenges, given our strict provisioning and server requirements, to find models that work and how we characterize and work with data that comes out of servers in place there that might differ in some way, just to meet the local context. And in some cases as well, in South America, we're running into the same sorts of questions. So that's something that 2013, 2014, we hope to have a plan for that. So we have something we call internally MLAB Lite. So it's not a full-time gigabit connection. It may be part-time, it may be a lower bandwidth connection, but making sure that we're marking that data and characterizing the data that comes in with those, so we know on what points it's comparable or what points it's not comparable, how it may be of interest, so that we're not comparing things that shouldn't be compared directly without that extra understanding.
Basically, the model we have was invented in Silicon Valley for Silicon Valley networks, right? And one of the assumptions it makes is that we want to over-provision the connectivity of the servers so much that we can basically guarantee that pipe to the server will never be the bottleneck. It will never be clogged with tests, and the data will reflect that clog instead of the actual, you know, happenings on the network. When you look at, you know, emerging regions where they may have sub-broadband speeds, that's a more difficult proposition. So setting up the MLAB setup that we have now in those places would result in data that wasn't comparable with other data and would actually not be suited. So what we're doing is trying to develop a model that can measure accurately in places with very low connectivity.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So in terms of, you know, reducing variables, I assume that, like, the further you are from a server that you're, you know, between the client and the server, the more variables you're encountering. And so is there sort of, in terms of getting the most accurate data, do you guys have, like, a cap of some sort that, like, you can't be further away from a server than X distance?
Yeah. Usually in the analysis, as part of the qualification and the confidence interval of any analysis, yeah, we use RTT or network distance as a rough proxy for that. We do have some things in the works with the platform in terms of our load balancing and server selection tool that's forthcoming. Where we may be able to incorporate some physical distance as well, some geographic distance to feed into that. But we're not really in the interest of precluding data at the outset. We would rather present it as it is and characterize it as fully as possible. That the thinking behind using the Web 100 instrumentation package and the Web 10G package beyond that is this idea of if you're in an active user-initiated testing protocol like we are, where you may not be able to get an exact, particular, narrow, deep dive into what it is that you're measuring, a very broad swath, being more expansive, more all-inclusive, is better because you can make better deductions and better approximations from that.
So we're equal opportunity in terms of collecting data. Anyone can run a test. It will run against the closest server, even if that server is 3,000 miles away. However, when we process that data, we will, you know, we have, you know, strict limits to what we will consider robust for a number of tests. So.
And it's usually been fairly obvious to us in the analysis where that's the case. If we have access to a couple of different geolocation databases that allow us to use the IP addresses, the only identifiable component of our tests, to get a pretty good approximation of how close someone it is. And that lines up fairly well with RTT as a metric, as a network metric. So if you're a cat and you want to know how your internet access is performing, you have a variety of options. Not only is the internet full of cats also use the internet, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not responsible for the cats, but
the data show.
The data show.
There's a New Yorker cartoon. It's my favorite. that has a couple of dogs on a keyboard saying, the best thing about the internet is no one knows you're a dog.
I should have included it.
Yeah.
So continuing that theme of inclusiveness, of comprehensive data capture, because we are a research platform, because we have capacity to host up to a dozen experiments, that means that we can vet and select for a good diversity of approaches of testing protocols. So whether those are traditional client server based, web-based, consumer premises equipment, or as we'll be launching hopefully in the spring in the coming year in earnest, we have some beta code out for a mobile tool to actually start measuring not only the overlapping areas of interest for mobile networks, but also the very specific metrics and indicators for mobile network performance and access. They're all active tests, as we've touched upon a number of times. It just means that rather than following the user where they go and taking observations organically and passively, the user has to actively initiate them, and as part and parcel of that, they're sending a synthetic data flow from their endpoint into our servers. And really what we're interested in is not their behavior, not their activity. What we're interested in are how their network access, how their links respond to that synthetic data flow. So whether that's a performance measurement, or as we're increasingly getting into and what kind of overlaps, and why we've been talking to Ryan a lot, is characterizing forms of interference, censorship, and surveillance on the network. Also, at the risk of being further redundant, all of our tools are required as condition of operating on the platform using our resources. One of the requirements of openness is that the tools themselves, the tools that the users interact with, are open source. Mm-hmm. And the advantage to that, as was pointed out in the introductory slides, is that that makes the testing protocol very, very clear. It makes it very easy for us to communicate and have a good in-depth discussions with communities of interest, researchers, regulators, whoever else, cats, about exactly what it is we are and aren't measuring and how we're going about it. All of this flows into an open data ecosystem that serves even more kinds of cats. Open science cat says, business cat the regulator. I guess business cat's now a lobbyist or a regulator.
It was a lobbyist, now a regulator.
Now a regulator. So this is just to put in context many of the things that we've talked about, that the user initiation, the active testing is really just the beginning, the genesis of the data. It feeds into the measurement hosts that are situated globally, as we pointed out a couple of times now. But we also have a robust data infrastructure that collects this in a near real-time basis. Again, we're working on improvements in our 2013-2014 planning to improve the speed at which we're collecting that, the robustness, making this a more suitable resource for the increasingly diverse set of experiments that we're running and interests that we're pursuing. This all feeds into this now 600-plus, I swear it was just 500 plus just the other day, terabytes of data that anybody can have access to. And we have a variety of ways to do that. For folks who have the capacity, who might be running a Hadoop cluster or something similar and able to intake large amounts of data into a large data store and do some analysis, we have the raw data. We have all of the materials in the source code that inform how you parse that, how you break down and make sense of that. And then we also have this tool that was built in part for our project, BigQuery, which is a SQL-like interface. So if you understand that querying language, you can just interact directly with the data. And there's a number of good bridging tools to bring that into other analytical environments. There's an excellent bridge from R into BigQuery. That's very useful for people who think about this more in terms of statistical models. But the idea is, and I have a slide that I'll get into a little bit next, that just makes this point that we're trying to bridge from the collection and curation of this data over into improving access. So there are many conveniences and affordances that we have now for getting into that data. And to prove that point, one of the engineers who works on the project, just over the last couple of days, using nothing but the tools that we advocate for accessing this data, and in a amazingly sparse amount of code, was able to query and generate this map. So if you want to...
So this is 3 months of tests, any test running against the platform, geolocated. So you can see we need more servers. because there are a lot of places where we don't have servers where these tests are coming from. You see sort of a concentration down in, I think, Sao Paulo. You see India is
surprisingly.
Yeah. And these are themselves research questions, like why are these happening? Where are they coming from? How are people finding out about these tests? And what are the, you know, what do they want to learn from them? But, you know, we looked at this, and this means we need to, you know, we need to get servers down there. So that being just, you know, a visualization of our sort of global reach, and also a clear indication that sort of the scope we have in mind is correct, that there is a, you know, this does need to be a truly global program, and the internet is truly global. So that understanding needs to reflect that. I'm going to move back one slide, and just because I like to look at these cats, and also because I want to make sure that, you know, this gets complex quickly, and we've given an overview, but are there questions here about any of the workings? Are there questions about what's going on before we move on? You know, what I will begin to cover next are just, you know, what happens after this ecosystem is complete? Like, what are the results we have seen, and what would we like to see? So there may not be any questions, and with that, I'll just move on. But
You said you massively over-provisioned the bandwidth. How much bandwidth does a given cluster have?
So our sites minimally are three servers. We have a few that are four for additional capacity or for additional infrastructure and management. So for those three servers, we require a full-time gigabit uplink.
Yeah, and we have never even close to touch that. So that's
regardless, we do monitor that very closely. We have a robust monitoring infrastructure that goes beyond just the basic Planet Lab tools. Again, as a lot of the technology work at OTI goes, just using the best of breed open source tools, Nagios, Netmon, Comon, things of this nature, to stay on top of that. And we are in robust internal discussions around what are the triggers, at what point do we see the uptick that we need to start going to 10 gig full-time uplinks, where we're capable of doing that. And to my earlier point about on the other end of the scale, how do we do that in a way that maintains a continuity in the data, that maintains context in the data? How do we characterize all the operational conditions around collections so people understand what they might be seeing as either an organic artifact in the data or some externality, like increasing that provisioning to keep up with the fact that in developed nations, at least, we see a much greater uptick in cable and fiber adoption.
Cool. So, yeah.
I think I have a question, mostly aided by the illustrations and the cats.
Yeah.
I'm wondering about the connection between 4 and 1, between the internet user and the researcher and the regulator. When do the cats come back together? Like, does one recognize the significance of 4, like, at the end of the loop?
So, implicitly or explicitly, yeah, because the this is a continuum, right? It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, and what we want to see is regulation that will, you know, provision a ubiquitous, fast, you know, user-centric internet. We want to see research that will move the state of networking forward globally, so that becomes possible. And whether or not, you know, the cat online in number one recognizes that as a product of this cycle or no, probably they don't, right? Like, who has time? But whether or not the benefits will be recognized in one, right? So this is a feedback loop that exists.
Put
an error. Education, you know, like, as an educated user, like a proactive, I don't even just want to say consumer, but an educated participant.
Right.
Yeah, because like 4, it doesn't, whatever one needs doesn't happen without what's happening with 4. Right.
There's probably another point worth emphasizing that we often bring up, and I think we just overlooked, is that in that first step in this ecosystem, the orange tabby not only sends data into that virtuous circle, and yeah, there probably is an arrow missing there, but they get immediate feedback from the tools themselves. Yeah. So to your point about user education, they're seeing what the tools are reporting on different characteristics. So if they're trying to diagnose, or they're just curious about whether they're getting what they're paying for, or they should be having a serious conversation with their provider, or looking further afield for another provider that might be able to do better, they get that immediately. They don't necessarily have to wait for all of that to flow all the way through the ecosystem here.
And I saw a question back.
I wanted to derail things. I was hoping you could say a little more about the mobile-specific data, if there's challenges to that, what you're kind of, what's most relevant there.
Well, it's a different and difficult problem, and I am you know, I'm not the person technically working on it, so I don't have a very technical answer. But you know, one example would be that IP address is an identifier is not the same as it would be for a for another test. So figuring out how to do this open and not open measurement without collecting personal identification, personal information like location, like other things, is a challenge, and it's one where you're talking with a number of people about right now. Cool. So I want to just go back one slide and belabor the point on active measurement, because I think it's really important here, and it's something that connects very closely with what our mission is. This active measurement means that we are not observing any of the behavior of a user online. You are not collecting data about how Meredith is using the internet, how what applications I like and how they perform. You are collecting data about the way the network responds to a synthetic and duplicated across test instances stream of data, which means that we can publish all of that data without publishing any personal information. And that, that is a constraint. There are a number of interesting data sets that could be produced through passive measurement, through observing user behavior, but those couldn't be made openly available in the same way, responsibly. So that's a kind of a constraint we put to the research community, because of the importance of this kind of open ecosystem. So I wanted to make clear kind of that is one of sort of the linchpins of what we're doing and what the implications are. So what happens, after the 1, 2, 3, 4 gets going, right? So this is a quick list of some of the papers that have been written based on papers and reports that have been written based on the measurement lab data. And what's interesting is not really going through this list and trying to read it from this slide. It's more just a visual corollary. These papers are all, when they're using a similar data set, they are in dialogue, right? They begin to see different things with one set of data that actually spans the capital I internet in a way that, a measurement connecting to a server under someone's bench in a lab would just not be able to. These are huge, massive data sets that can really inform an understanding of what's going on in a way that a lot of the research to this point and some of the research still doesn't. It is great research, but this what we want to do is catalyze this kind of science based on a much larger scope and allow people to, if I am interested in one of these papers as a researcher and want to do something similar, what can I add to this, right? How can this become a sort of collaborative feedback loop instead of everyone reinventing the wheel, having to write their own measurement tool, throwing away the data afterward, and sort of the progress of this science stalling when we really need it to accelerate. You had a question?
Do you require these papers to be open access?
No. Yeah, our data are, we would love them to be, but our data are licensed under CC0, which means you can do whatever you want with it, so it also means accountable policy, we hope, and that's really what we're pushing for, right? If this is a list of a number of the countries who are using our data and our tools in different ways in a regulatory capacity. This doesn't mean that broadband policy is where a number of people would like it to be, but this does mean that, when Greece or the FCC or the European Commission or Austria begin to use our tools, begin to use the platform, that whatever assumptions they make, they are based on data that can then be scientifically verified by, outside observers, by a community of technologists and, people who care about this field, after the fact that regulation can be crafted based on sort of ground truth reality that is very difficult to argue with an open data set. I can say, please submit a patch if you would like to fix something. But this hopefully takes some of the hyperbole out of a lot of these dialogue and makes it, much more necessary to bring facts to the table, to bring, to bring sort of a scientifically based approach to these problems. Please.
I understand how all this would be incredibly useful for someone who is dealing with network management and stuff like that. But what I don't understand is how this would be useful, like, for example, in deciding or making a regulatory advocacy point about broadband access.
It may be one tool in the tool set, right? And I'm not, I'm not prescribing its use. But if you look at a certain area where you have other data that shows, that would indicate something about access, and then you look and you see it looks like this kind of, traffic management is also prevalent in this area, and you begin to be able to have at least sort of some correlative sense about what's going on, it can't do anything but help. It is, again, this is one tool. This is not going to solve broadband regulation, but it is, it is a way of approaching it that we think should be prescriptive in other spaces as well. Anyone else? Cool. So this is a crib list. This is very short. There are, each of these could be its own presentation, but basically there is uptake, and where there is uptake, it means that, the research community, the technical community can come in and have, have an input here. And then we have something that is, this is off center, but that's okay. This is basically when, when four gets back to one, right? When we have this large data set that is then processed, that is then analyzed, that is visualized by people who understand it, what are the implications? And these are actually all live on our site. You see the sort of link in the bottom left. But I never rely on a live demo to work during a presentation. So if anyone is interested afterward, we can go through these. There's a ton more here, but I've done some really quick screenshots and just some demonstrations of what some of the research scientists working on MLAB and some other people have done with this massive data set. So this is a really quick, screenshot of something. You can see here just sort of what is the overall power of globally comparable data. We already are comparing apples to apples in all of these cases. This is not different methodological approaches to, broad download throughput, right? These are actually comparable. So you can quibble with the methodology of how this was measured, but you can't, this as a relative data set is incredibly powerful. What you have here is the number of tests indicates the circle size. So the statistical significance goes up as the size of the circle goes up. This is one circle per country. And then the median download throughput for April 2012, it increases as the color blue darkens, right? So dark is good. I have highlighted in the screenshot the US, so it looks like we have 6.15, that's not so bad, right? That's overall throughout the U.S., with some bias to the coasts because that's where most of our tests come from. But you could already see, some interesting questions to compare. So then we go, oh, well, look, Massachusetts. I did the local version here. So it looks like Massachusetts is significantly higher than the median for the U.S. This is in April 2012, so these shift. And then we look, I just took Massachusetts, the U.S. median, and Boston, and it looks like Boston is actually well below Massachusetts in aggregate and below the U.S., the median average for the U.S. as well. And this is from January 2010 to October 2012. I don't know the answer for that, maybe. I would need to look at the
different in Cambridge.
We use a geolocation service, so I would have to look at. But for all intents and purposes, it's Boston.
Speculation it could be because there's less broadband availability in low income areas in Boston than there is, let's say, in Weston. and that could be.
Yeah.
That's right. That's actually a good policy. You know, I'd want to look at that if I were a regulator. Let's put it that way.
Right. So this is, I mean, okay. So we just started having questions, right? This is, I have no answers here. What I do have is a means for anyone here who wants to start looking into it to be like, what is actually going on? This is not just, you know, this is not just pretty data. You can start figuring out, you know, is this a problem with the tests? Are we having, you know, or is this a problem with access in Boston? Are we, you know, I don't know, a million different scenarios, but this can actually be researched and you can actually have, you know, scientifically sound sort of prescriptive solutions to issues that are shown by data. So this is very preliminary analysis. We have, again, you know, much, much more data. And I think I sometimes feel like just showing the download throughput here does a disservice because what we're providing is much, much more than just a speed test. But speed is an accessible metric, so it's easy to show. But a number of other factors could be influencing what we're seeing here. I encourage you to find out. And I'm going to move on now and just, you know, what have developers outside of the MLab researchers who put those visualizations together done? And this is a little bit grainy, but this was a guy who took data from a tool we have called Glasnost. And Glasnost was created to detect BitTorrent throttling and blocking. So you run this test and it will detect, you know, is your ISP blocking or throttling BitTorrent? This is very topical around 2009. Glasnost is now expanded to encompass Flash and a number of different sort of protocol-specific tests, but basically a test, you know, is something fishy. He took this data and created this very space-age visualization that you can actually sort of turn and play with. The length of the line are the number of tests, and the color are the, you know, from blue being pretty good to red being a lot of throttling. The color are, you know, where how much throttling is going on. And there's an index here that's the top throttlers, and I think it's Malaysia is top, Singapore is second, Thailand is third, Japan is fourth, and the UK is fifth. So, you know, there you go. And this is per month that you can, these, I imagine the slides will be posted, so people, these are all live links, so you can go play with all of this. Anyway, this was just a guy who decided this was interesting. We then have and this is a little grainy too, but anyway, and just recently, the sort of net neutrality debate is heating up in the EU, and there was an organization that took the same Glasnost data and made a net neutrality map that was actually included in some of the responses to the European Commission questionnaire on network neutrality, right? Like, look, this is what's happening. You can see actually, you know, throttling by provider per country. And that's what this little screenshot that says US shows. And it's a little bit grainy, but it'll show, you know, the number of tests, you know, what data is this based on, and then how many of those have been shaped or throttled or otherwise. And then we have another study out of Syracuse from Milton Mueller and some people who looked at this data and determined not only that throttling was happening, but that deep packet inspection was being used to facilitate this throttling. Because he looked at a BitTorrent port and then a non-BitTorrent port. And when it was going to the non-BitTorrent port, but also being throttled, you know, you would have to figure out that was a BitTorrent packet before it got there, right? Because it was not. And so based on that, he did this, you know, again, it's live here. He and his students did these visualizations that kind of demonstrated that. And this is one chart for Canada. Canada was the first on the list, so I took the screenshot. But you can see per provider what's the percent of DPI, and you can sort of drill down into some other metrics. Following that fun tour through some of the effects of this open data, of this sort of system, we have just a quick crib list of what's happening next. I mean, I think more of the analysis and visualization, you know, making this compelling and meaningful, surfacing the questions, you know, why is Boston below the US median, surfacing surfacing ideas about what is happening on networks, and making that intelligible to people who don't understand the inner workings of the internet. That's huge. And if anyone is, you know, we are a collaborative project, so anyone who's interested in doing that kind of work, we invite you to come talk to us. We would, you know, happily collaborate on something like that, expanding the platform, right? So you saw tons of tests coming from places that don't have servers, so effectively can't get good results from those tests. We want, you know, we need global coverage. We need to be able to sort of speak about the internet in global terms, because that's, you know, how it exists. And then more tools, right? So as we progress, we need more mobile tools. We need, you know, novel new ways to measure things that keep time with the internet. And then, you know, just as sort of to reflect this back, you know, I would say, what's next for MLAB, but what's next for everyone? Begin asking where the data came from, right? Is this open? What is this decision based on? Is the methodology published? You know, begin being sensitive to where these dry facts come from. I don't think this is a room that I need to instruct on that, but I think that a number of people feel that, you know, that there is a cultural construct that it is okay not to understand this, that this is something experts take care of, and that we, you know, don't need to understand or would never be able to understand. So there is a sort of a culture that it's okay to be ignorant on these. And I think that, you know, while I'm never going to be an engineer, I can at least begin to understand what does good science look like and what does bad science look like, and ask the questions that would, you know, push decisions in the direction of, you know, incorporating good science and incorporating that dialogue. So, and I think that's it. Thomas, did you want to finish up or? No?
No.
No?
Just as cool. The slide says, do we have a charming marketing video if you want a further introduction with flying WYSI logos?
Yeah, it says
lots more information at the website, of
300
course.
Terabytes of data. So that was like 6 months ago we wrote that, and then we're like,
That's about right.
Yeah. So thank you. Does anyone have questions? Ryan?
Jump in first here. And I just wanted to underscore, first of all, again, thank you guys for coming. And, you know, I've sort of been working with Thomas and Meredith now for a little over a year. And whenever I talk with them or talk with Sasha Meinrath, also at OTI, you know, they're always underscoring, you know, like that last slide that they showed is not just, you know, like, you know, pablum. Like, they sincerely ask all the time, like, what new research can we be doing? You know, what new tools can we be running? And, you know, so partly why I wanted to make sure that they had a chance to talk to this Berkman community where there's so much interesting research going on. You know, if you guys have any questions and ideas, I will gladly volunteer Meredith and Thomas's emails for you to bug them, because I know that's, you know, they're really committed to expanding this platform. So in that vein, the question that I wanted to ask is, you know, since you guys spend so much time, you know, thinking about this and the data that you have, you know, what's sort of the one big, you know, open question that you feel like, you know, researchers should be looking at, but you're surprised haven't been yet with this data?
Whoa. So I think, I mean, this is answering a question that I just want to answer, but I think one thing I would really love to see happening is more, you know, interdisciplinary is sort of a cheap term for, you know, contextualizing things that matter across disciplines, right? But I would love to see more hard research done to figure out how to take, you know, Thomas mentioned the Web 100 stack, and what that does is collect the state, you know, every TCP state in that connection. So that's a ton of data about exactly what was happening, not just the speed to and from, right? But how do we begin to sort of take these granular inputs and model them so that what we're giving to, you know, consumers and users and, you know, communities is good information that would allow them to understand their experience. So really thinking about how do we make this something that is accessible, and how do we, you know, use this data in intelligent ways to create models that are beyond up and down throughput and actually can tell people, you know, about what's happening and have that reflective of it, of it, of the user experience.
You might have mentioned it at the beginning and I wasn't attentive, but how is the project financed?
So I work for Google and they pay my salary to do this, which is cool. But it's
they have the cash.
Yeah. So Google's one of many. When we showed the map of servers, all of those servers are hosted by people who fund them. So pay for the connectivity, pay for the hardware, pay to maintain them and have people on site if something goes wrong. OTI, Open Technology Institute, is one of the financers. But there are also the researchers who create the tools often are funded through research grants. I may not know about all of those, but it's there are a huge number of sources of income that then sort of flow up to make this project work.
That's why we characterize it as a consortium. So to make clear that it's not a project that's housed in any one of those partners. So there's a lot of in-kind and kind of matching donation of time and resources and several different ways in which people contribute, as Meredith highlighted.
Yeah.
Thanks for the nice presentation and the wonderful work. So if you had a magic wand and could wave it at any point in the process of data collection and analysis, where would it be? Would you have more testers? Would you have more servers? Would you have more tools for looking at things? Would you have more researchers looking at the tools at the end?
Yes.
Or things right as well?
So all of it, but I think, for me right now, getting more servers is crucial because I'm seeing, again, seeing those lights around India, seeing those lights in Sao Paulo and knowing that we're not giving good data and we're not getting good data is really important. That is crucial. And then also getting more people looking at the data, I think analyzing the data and building both the kind of visualizations you saw here and doing the hard science that can, that can then feed back into that process. But yes, all of it.
On servers, is it willing institutions with a gigabit connection?
Yeah. That's it. And willing as well.
Yeah.
So getting people who understand the efficacy of this thing that is pretty, broadband measurement is pretty arcane. It's not immediately interesting to everybody. So it's been a slow build. It's immediately interesting to me. But I think that's happening, right? We started with 3 servers a number of, 3 years ago, something like that, and we have 98 now, and it may be 101. I don't know. They may have just brought a new site online, which happens frequently now. Anyone else? Anyone want to talk about measurement?
So to servers in Asia region,
yeah.
On the map, what country are they?
Those are in Korea.
Korea.
Are the Korean nodes up yet? So there is a node that is up in Korea, I believe, as of now. We should look at the live site. Mm-hmm. See, this is also what happens when we have, this is a consortium, so bringing servers online sort of happens, and I will get an email after the fact. But we also, we're looking at servers in Tokyo, and there are, but we need, we need more servers in that region. So it would be great. Not yet, but we are working with TNet in South Africa and KENet in Kenya. So that should be happening. I don't have a timeline because it's not always easy to predict when it will actually happen. But we are in, those are sort of the two places that can meet our requirements that we know about. And we're looking to expand based on the sort of light model to places that may not have a gig to offer, but where we still want to get measurements.
West Africa, you don't think Ghana has the capacity to host any of the nodes?
I don't know. I'm not a, you know, we're working with people who are based in the region, and it's really, it's kind of an ad hoc process, you know, who approaches us, who has the contacts there, and, you know, who understands how the network works. So I don't know the answer to that question, but it would be great to know, to find out, and to, you know, we are equal opportunity. Anyone who can host a server in a way that makes sense for us, we, you know, join MLab.
Easy to some folks.
Yeah. Please do. Please do. Yeah.
There aren't immediate questions at the moment. I think you guys said you might be able to do a live demo. Can you show that?
We can try. So I'm very distrustful of technology working during presentations, which is why I... So here we go. Do you want to do it or do you want me to?
No one can do it.
This is, doesn't look like the links are live in this PDF. Maybe do you want to try bringing it up on your? So these, if you go to measurementlab.net/visualizations, you can find these and more. And we'll try to visualization. Singular. There used to be just one.
this doesn't always work on my machine. Or I should say, it doesn't always work in Firefox.
Let me try.
There you go.
Yep, Dan, who can help if you have an issue?
Mm-hmm. Ignore. So there, you see the website?
Glorious high resolution.
It's a little slow, so... This is also a live demo of me accessing the website. So pardon me, I have the air, which the trackpad goes in the other direction, which makes me really... here. I don't... So here is a map that I can't... Let's get down to explore data.
There you go.
All right. Anyone can follow along probably more quickly. So this is the Public Data Explorer site, and we use Public Data Explorer because it's there, and anyone can sort of import their data and start making these kind of visualizations. It was sort of a quick way to make this happen, but all of the analysis is public, and this was all done using sort of public tools, so anyone could replicate it. You have here. I'm going to zoom in a little bit. This is basically the map that I showed, right? The darker the blue, the higher the speed. So you have the US, you have India, but India is actually not representative because we don't have servers there, so that may be higher. You have Ukraine, Turkey, and this all sort of animates, so that's fun. You see, starting in 2010, we weren't getting as many tests, and that grows. Looks like speed is increasing in the U.S. And then we can drill down by region. So, loading. This tool was not made for live demos, but. And it's not scrolling for me, but so anyone want to call out a country within our server range that they'd like to see specifically? The UK? Perfect. Yeah. Well, it worked. So, and then you look at the UK here. Let me try to center this a little better. Wales. Ooh. That's higher in the U.S. Well, not Wales, but... and so we could animate this. Doesn't look like there's much change. We can also compare by city. So, but then we have to go to, so again, not made for. So let's go to the U.S. and then we can compare by ISP in Massachusetts. That's going to be fun. So.
I'm right.
Yeah, not surprising. Looks like Cambridge is below Boston. Anyway, so we could then do something like this that would number of tests, but we want median upload. Anyway, is there anything you want to show before I
sure.
close these?
Thomas, can you disaggregate that? I think when you project this on a line graph by the ASNs, that's where it starts to get interesting.
There, go.
No, I was asking you to do it. I don't know how to do it.
So this is fairly slow and boring demo because we didn't have it set up and this is a little clunky, but all of this and a lot more, including sort of comparing by ISP, is available here, and I'm going to try to. Yeah, let's. So, what are you looking at? And all these asterisks are places where we didn't have enough tests to reach sort of statistical significance to show the data. So. It's a little bit messy, but it's if we get less than 200 in a given month, and that's less than 200 unique IPs, so that's individual testing instances instead of individuals testing over and over again, we won't show it because cool.
Yeah, I don't remember how to get the ISP data.
I'm sure you guys have a elegant way to handle this, but it seems like the people who run the client and run the tests are going to be people who are already interested in broadband measurement, and that might skew your data.
That's totally apt. And actually, we didn't go into some of the ways we addressed that. I don't think, we haven't solved that problem, but the tests are open at the server and the client side, and what's happened is a number of different sort of applications have embedded the tests as tuning devices or as means for their users to get this data. So a lot of the 200,000 tests that we get a day aren't from people who even care. They're from people who are using this to sort of help them do something else. That's in the case of some of those regulators, that's exactly what they did. They took the test and sort of embedded it in their own sort of national testing dashboard so that what they're showing is branded, but it's still our data.
Example of the biggest contributor of data that,
the biggest, it's so BitTorrent without, without asking us, which is what's really cool about this open model. We encourage it. That wasn't, that they embedded our NDT test in what's called their uTorrent client. So people trying to, figure out if they have the broadband to use the BitTorrent uTorrent client, use the NDT test to figure that out, and every time they do that, the data are contributed back. So.
Are there any last questions before we finish? Going, gone? Okay, well then I'd like to thank Thomas and Meredith. Thank you.